Welcome back to another episode of Frog Fever, a Big 12 podcast brought to you by killerfrogs.com. My name is Davis Wilson. My co-host, Nick Geramonte, is here again. Nick, how are we today?
I'm great. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. We got to watch Big 12 basketball this week, so you can't complain too much.
We're back.
I know. It feels good. So before we get into all the TCU stuff, there's a lot of TCU stuff we're going to discuss. But before we get into that, I thought we could touch on a little bit of the Big 12 as a whole. There are some big games, some interesting results. I guess out of the first, some teams have played two games, some have played one. Out of the first week, any big takeaways from the Big 12?
Yeah, I mean, if we kind of want to go in chronological order, I feel like there was only three big games so far that have implications. Mm-hmm. We're recording this on Friday too, so San Diego State at BYU tips off tonight, which will be interesting to see how good the Cougars are. But yeah. The first game I want to talk about, which happened on Monday, was the big upset in the Big 12, which was the Pokes of Oklahoma State going down to Abilene Christian. So mm-hmm. kind of a surprise there, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did our Big 12 rankings last week. The Pokes weren't exactly at the top of the board, and Abilene Christian isn't at a big gimme, but they should have won this game for sure. So,
yeah,
I mean, overreact to one game, I guess.
Yeah. They were, Oklahoma State was a 10.5-point favorite at home. I'm a big Mike Boynton guy, so it kind of stinks to see, but yeah, that's definitely not how they want to start the year. I'm looking at the stats right now. Like, they didn't get, like, the rebounding numbers were the same, which I guess is a problem in itself that Oklahoma didn't out-rebound Abilene Christian. But Oklahoma State only shot 5% worse. They shot 41%. Abilene State shot 45%. I mean, I don't know. Maybe this Oklahoma team is not as good as we gave them credit for, but I would say similar to TCU last year, although I don't think Oklahoma State this year is as good as TCU was last year. I don't think we should react too much, but that is a bit of a concerning loss, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm a Pokes guy, and obviously you don't want to just like write them off and just say that they suck after the game one. But yeah, I got the stats pulled up too. Like, they had so much roster turnover, I think, from last year. Like, their starting backcourt is the same, but other than that, you know, all their big men are brand new. And you look at, like, Bryce Thompson was the only guy that really showed up with 19 points. And you don't expect John Michael Wright, the starting point guard, to go 0-6 from 3 every game. Mm-hmm. And so you give them a little bit of a pass. Yeah, as we said before, like, they're not going to be top of Big 12. And you look at their schedule coming up, it should be a lot of winnable games. Mm-hmm. I think they play Creighton in non-conference, which is a big one for them. But leading up to that, like, they should not drop another game. And it does serve as a little bit of a wake-up call. Like, we saw with the Frog last year, mm-hmm. how we dropped one of the first three, which we shouldn't have, and almost lost the first one. So you take a little bit of a deep breath, and you just kind of move on. Like, they got a big week. They got a big win at OU in football, so they probably get their fans off their back a little bit.
When you get to watch Ollie Gordon Jr. run the ball on Saturdays, maybe you can cut your basketball team a little bit of slack.
Yeah, props to Mike Boynton for losing right after that, because then you just kind of sweep it under the carpet. But yeah. Once they start to pay attention to basketball down there, you definitely want to improve on it.
Absolutely. And then kind of on the other side, Oklahoma State had bad loss. Baylor, though, a pretty good win, right? I mean, it was a neutral site game against Auburn, who's a good team. A lot of eyes were on that game because of Jacoby Walter, the true freshman that Baylor has. And he did not disappoint at all. He had 28 points, right, on 7 of 13 shooting. 10 of 10 from the free throw line is always good to see. I know you watched this game. What are your takeaways? I mean, Baylor looks to be a good team again. No surprise.
Yeah. Every year it seems like Baylor kind of has this turnover in guards when they'd like just reload, and like we saw like Keontae George last year, and I think they've had like first round picks,
mm-hmm.
like top 15 picks the last 3 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But like they just reload, like they're so deep at the guard position. Like mm-hmm. when I was watching this game, it Jacoby Walter is so like, dude is a dog. He's so long and lanky. I know he didn't have as much success in their second game, but when that Auburn game, when Baylor needed buckets and they were down the majority of the game, and he just kept providing, like he's all of 6'5", long, lanky, can score at every level. Like he's could be a top five pick, could be the best NBA prospect in college right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they run so deep at the guard position. Obviously they're deep, like their defense is questionable. It's, mm-hmm. it's about what we knew of Baylor, and I think their offense was even better than we expected. And Baylor's just gonna be, you know, a powerhouse in this conference for every year with Scott Drew, because they just reload with guards. Like Ray J. Dennis was good, Langston Love was good. Like they started Nunn over Langston Love, which I didn't think was gonna happen, but he provided two. And that Macy, who got the big steal in the Auburn game to put him up.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're just athletic. They probably do need a big man, and you can probably attack him down low if you have a stud big man who can challenge them physically. But their offense is as good as we've seen in the nation, and I think they're underrated at that 20th spot.
Yeah,
in AP.
Absolutely. Going back to Jacoby Walter, that was such a fun game to watch because of him. I mean, he in their second game, I think they played like John Brown, which I couldn't tell you one fun fact about John Brown, but he scored only 7 points on 33% shooting. But bigger takeaway is that he showed up in his first college game ever. It was the marquee game. Like everybody was watching that game, and he beat a good Auburn team and like 28 points, 6 rebounds. Dude's just an athlete, and I'm excited to continue to watch him as the season goes on. I mean, yeah, you said it. It's really amazing how Scott Drew can reload every year like that. And he's clearly found another one of those guys in Jacoby Walter.
Yeah, it was impressive to me because they were down the majority of the game, and that was, you know, the marquee game of the week, and they needed buckets. And
mm-hmm.
so it was a lot of Jacoby Walter like creating his own shot, and he can do that to the ability of anybody. Like it almost in a way, with him being so long and lanky, it reminds me of like the Brandon Miller effect at mm-hmm. Alabama last year, how he was just a freshman and they had such a loaded offense, and he would just will them to games at times with his ability to score at all levels. So he's a scary guy to watch in the conference. And if you're going to overreact to a game, like Jacoby Walter being a top player in the conference is an overreaction that I had, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. That was you can't have a better debut than that, I don't think. And then our third game we were going to talk about in the Big 12, the only other game that kind of was, I guess, like you said, had implications was Kansas State lost to USC. This is another one of those games that kind of was not the standalone game, but the standalone kind of marquee game, both good teams. We got to see some guys on USC that are exciting, and then kind of this new look Kansas State team. They lost 82-69. It's so early. We can't overreact to anything, but the one thing I was encouraged by was, I guess, the play of Tyler Perry. I loved, I was interested to see how he'd do kind of transitioning to Kansas State, and he wasn't all that efficient, but he scored 22 points, 4 steals, 6 assists. Like he kind of filled the stat sheet up. And I think in a loss like that, you have to kind of find things to take away. And I think that he's going to be an exciting player for them this year for sure.
Yeah. Everybody knew he was one of the top transfers in college basketball. I think he was at North Texas last year and just balled for them. But I was surprised to the volume that Tang allowed him to have shooting. Yeah. Like he just chucked and chucked, which almost at a time, I think early in the game wasn't efficient for them because mm-hmm. he wasn't making early. Obviously you can see the talent, and his shot making was there in the second half when they kind of made a push at the end. But I mean, USC kind of had this game the whole time. Mm-hmm. The thing I took away from this game is that K-State was like uncharacteristic on offense. Like they seemed almost out of sorts at times, mm-hmm. which kind of played to how they played last year. Obviously, like you have Marquise Noel and Keontae, and those guys were big, you know, one-on-one guys. Like Marquise would make the craziest shots ever, and they kind of stuck to that and just kind of put like Tyler Perry in that role. And Arthur Kaluma plays as hard as anybody, but he missed mm-hmm. 1 of 11 shots, 0 of 5 from 3. He's going to be better. Cam Carter's probably going to be better. They just missed a lot of shots, but I would like to see them being more characteristic on offense. Like it seemed like USC kind of had this game. They were mm-hmm. just more in control, more mellow than an out-of-sorts K-State team.
Yeah, they do really. I mean, the problem was inefficiency, I think. They weren't efficient at all. They shot 31% from the field. They shot 11 more shots than USC did, and USC shot over 50%. Like, efficiency was a huge problem, and, I mean, Tyler Perry was not efficient. Kaluma was not efficient. I think that, I mean, I don't know. They lost their two guys from last year, right? I think it's going to take some time for them to kind of figure out the team they are now. I'm not very worried. They out-rebounded USC, which is nice to see, always nice to win a rebound battle. But yeah, I mean, USC, it's not like the Oklahoma State thing. USC is a good team that they lost to. So yeah, I think Kansas State has some stuff to figure out, but I'm not concerned. Are you?
Yeah, I wouldn't say panic mode yet. Like you do have the Naquan Tomlin situation, which yeah. I don't know what's going to happen there. Like he is probably their best returning player, so it's worth noting that he didn't play. Mm-hmm. And USC is a really good team, but I would like to see K-State get more quality shots.
Absolutely.
I think it was kind of underwhelming for what you expected out of this team, because they did, as we talked about Baylor, like Baylor reloaded and they showed that it was positives. I think K-State reloaded and you saw signs, and it is night one, but I would like to see them be more under control and play to the level of a good team like USC.
Sure. Yeah. Now I think we can transition more to our Frogs, talk about TCU a little bit. I think we'll talk about each game a little bit, but I think the one thing I want to mention right off the bat that just like jumped off the screen for me is the
go for it.
And you talked about this when we talked last week, but it's just the improvement of Jacoby Coles offensively. Man, like he was he was the best player. Is that crazy to say he was the best offensive player for us so far?
I was ready to have that discussion too. Like,
yeah, I mean,
is he the go-to guy? What do you think?
I don't know. Like, I was expecting, and you know, no one really played poorly. Emmanuel Miller had an interesting first game because he had some foul trouble, but you know, I still think he's one of those guys offensively. Jameer Nelson Jr. showed flashes of being that guy, but I think Jacoby Coles, man, just the confidence that he had. Like you could tell he was more confident in his offensive game. And that blew me away. That blew me away.
Yeah, when I was at the game and they did introductions, Jacoby Coles was the last dude on the bench getting like the, wow. You know, like, and Jacoby Coles.
Wow.
Like he was the last guy sitting. So obviously he has confidence. Jamie has confidence in him. Like if you put him in that spot. And dude is just, like, Jacoby Coles is one of those guys who's just such a sick story, because he was at Butler, yeah. Had a horrible injury, out for the season, transferred to TCU, and he really, like, to be honest, wasn't great his first year with the Frogs. Like, the fan base was kind of, you know, upset for him. He doesn't have, like, crazy athleticism, so if he's not making shots, there's not much to him. But he's just taken a big step every single year, and this year he is legitimately a star. Like he plays under control, he can score from all levels nowadays. It's insane to see the growth.
Yeah.
Now the is he the go-to guy conversation is gonna start taking over, because he is leading the team in points and I think 19 a game.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably still Emmanuel Miller.
Yeah.
But like what I like after the I was at the presser with Jamie after the first game, and we asked him about Jacoby, and he said that he thinks that when he's on, he is the most complete player for the Frogs, which I thought was crazy to say, because this roster is loaded with talent, and frankly, a lot of people who are more talented than Jacoby, but he's just like one of the smartest players on the floor. He's improved defensively a ton. He's under control. He can hit a jab. He's got post moves. He hits the fader. Like, he didn't miss a shot. His first seven shots last night. He, dude is a dog.
I was really impressed with him. And the discussion about who's the go-to guy offensively, that's going to be interesting. But one thing that I think is possible with this team, just because of the depth, is that they may have a couple dudes who can just be that guy, like Micah Peavy, another guy who took a really, really impressive step, in my opinion. He had 21 in the first game, I think. But maybe this is a team that, like, doesn't really have that guy who's going to do it. Like, Mike Miles was that guy last year. He, you know, you knew he was going to get his. But maybe this team is just so spread out and deep that it can be Coles one night, it could be Jameer one night, it could be Micah, it could be Avery Anderson, it could be all these guys. I just think that the depth of this team is super exciting.
Yeah, there's a part that's like refreshing about that almost. Like when Mike would get hurt in years past, it was almost panic mode. We'd lose, you know, we'd go on losing streaks and you just didn't know what to do because the offense was so surrounded about him making a play. So it's almost more free flowing. Not that losing Mike is a benefit at all, but the fact that you have so many guys to facilitate, like I thought Micah was the best player on the court that first game. Like he was doing everything from all angles, and obviously Emmanuel is first team all Big 12, so you can't count him out, and Jameer, and you know, yeah, as you said, we have so many guys who can do it. It's going to be interesting to see when they get into these tough games, who's the guy to take the last shot. Like, is it whoever's rolling that day? Is it a specific guy Jamie loves? And we'll see that as non-conference comes forward. But I think the big thing to take away is that, yeah, like Jacoby stepped up, Micah obviously improved. Like these guys we know improved, and we've seen flashes already from Jameer and Avery and various different guys. It's just crazy to me that, like, you, if you told me 2 years ago that Jacoby Coles was going to be the go-to guy for the Frogs, I'd call you crazy, but he's put himself in that conversation.
I think that's just credit to him. I mean, when I was at Big 12 Media Day and got to talk to Jamie a little bit, he talked a lot about the work that Jacoby had put in this offseason, and I think that's so evident just in two games. Another guy that Jameer was probably the guy I was most excited to watch in this first week, because, and you know, he was a scorer at Delaware. Like he filled it up, and I wanted to see if he was going to kind of step in and like take that role that Mike had. And he didn't necessarily do that, but I was almost more impressed with what he did. Like in the first game, I'm looking at his box score. He had 14 points, 6 assists, 2 blocks, 5 steals. He shot 75% from the field, 100% from 3. Like, well, first of all, like if someone told you that with guys like Xavier Cork and Ernest Udeh Jr., that if someone told you that Jameer was going to be the team leader in blocks in game one, what would you have said? Like, I think he's an athlete, and I think he's like just one of those guys who's going to do it all for TCU.
Yeah, the blocks he had were sick too. Like, he swatted the hell out of this guy in the second game, and he's just an exciting player. It'll be interesting to see how we look, because I look at him compared to Tyler Perry, which is probably like the two guards who are some of the top transfers in the country. And obviously when you look at TCU and Kansas State rivals, pretty much they took different approaches to start their career with their new team. Like Tyler Perry shot the ball, I don't know, 20 times. And Jameer kind of had that top scoring role at Delaware. So you would think he might come in and try to be the Mike guy, but he's just found his place in the offense, kind of let the game come to him. You know, he hasn't been like anything insane yet, but as you said, he's filling the stat sheet. He's playing hard on defense. He's just being a good, solid point guard. And he'll have his games where he puts up 20 or so and leads the team in scoring. But I like how he's let the game come to him. He seems calm. He seems fit with the team and a great fit for the Frogs.
Yeah, and I think another thing that Jamie mentioned at Big 12 Media Day a couple weeks ago was Jameer came in as this scoring guard and less of a point guard. And something that Jamie talked about a little bit was how he wanted him to, or he expected him to be more of that point guard. And I think that we really saw that. And this first week, he's, like you said, he's just not, he's not forcing anything. He's letting things come to him. He's, I mean, against Southern, he distributed really well. I mean, he has 8 steals already. Like, I think he's just the growth from him too. Like, we didn't know what he would be like on a team like TCU that's more talented, obviously, than Delaware. So he has more guys to pass to, I guess. But I don't know. I think it's really encouraging to see that, like, if he's not scoring, he can still be really, really effective and a huge positive for TCU.
He's been so efficient too. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's shooting the 50% from three and over 50% from the goal. And he's, yeah, as you said, he's got 4 steals a game. He's just doing everything, like, yeah, like letting the game come to him and just being that guy that you can depend on. This TCU team is also so short in ball handlers, too. I'm really only comfortable with, like, Jameer and Avery Anderson handling the ball right now. So he almost has to take that step back where he knows he's got to set up the offense. He knows he's got to be a pest on defense and be able to handle a transition and stuff like that. And he's done that great so far. 2-game sample size, obviously. Take it with a grain of salt, but Dude's been impressive in a way that maybe we didn't think he would be.
Mm-hmm. The last, I guess, new guy that I want to talk about. I mean, we know about Emmanuel and Micah. They both played well in the first week, but the new center, Ernest Udeh Jr., who for me at least it was tough because, you know, him or Jameer, but Ernest may have been the most excited I was for a transfer just because of the massive, like, needs that he addresses for TCU, rim protection, rebounding. He hasn't really done a ton of rim protecting yet. I mean, at least blocks wise, he is, you know, his huge presence is felt down there, even if he's not going to block shots. But the rebounding, I mean, he had 11 versus Omaha. He had some moments last night against Omaha where he was just kind of all over the court, like he was doing everything a little bit. He had that his one bucket was a rebound put back where he's fallen away. What are your impressions on his first 2 games, and what will he add, or what's going to look better as the season goes on in his game?
Yeah, I asked Jamie about the big men after the game, after the first game, because he played all of them around the same, which was surprising. Like, I thought, in terms of disappointments, probably Ernest is top of the list because he was 5-star All-American. Like, he got some minutes at Kansas last year, so you kind of expect him to take that next step here, especially with our shortage of centers. But, yeah, I mean, he's still such a raw talent, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we probably expected him to be better at the start, and you see these flashes of him just being so athletic and what he can do, but foul trouble is probably going to be an issue. And Jamie seems like he's still, like, Ernest started the 2 games, but he seems like he's still going back and forth with who he wants to play at center. And all 3 have kind of, like, shown flashes. Like, I thought Cork had a good first game. I thought Mustafa showed a lot of good flashes last game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a conversation of who to go with at center, who's going to get these big minutes, because right now they're just kind of rotating all 3. Mm-hmm. So, like, who do you think has been the best out of the 3 so far, and who should we go with forward?
Well, I think that the fact that he kind of played them all around the same amount of time, that, I mean, that may just be what it looks like this season. Who knows? But I imagine one guy will separate himself eventually. But I liked things that all three of them did. I was impressed at times, more in the Southern game, I think, with Xavier Cork. I think he had moments where, I mean, that's a guy that I feel like just plays really hard, and he's not always gonna, like, what he does is not always gonna show up on the stat book, like, after games. But I think he's just a guy that, like, likes playing. He had 8 points against Southern. Yeah, he had 6 rebounds. I don't know. We kind of knew what he was, but it's nice to see that. I mean, I don't know. He's, I think he's a good center. He's nothing super special, but I think I think he's improved a little bit. And I think that with guys like Mustafa and Ernest to kind of take the pressure off of him, I think that that'll be beneficial, because at the end of the year last year, like, he was literally the only center on this roster pretty much, because yeah, Eddie Lampkin quit. And it was just Xavier. So, like, I think that the pressure was there. And now that there's two other guys who can come in for him, I don't know. I'm excited to see what his season looks like. And you mentioned Mustafa had moments. What was it? Did he score 7 last night? Was that?
Yeah, he had two back to back, like, offensive rebounds, putbacks too.
Yeah.
So I like the flash out of him.
Yeah. I just think that overall, the center position and the depth is so much better. And I think that especially when Big 12 play comes along, that's going to be super evident. And I think TCU is going to really, really feel that they have more depth than they really have had in the last couple of years at that position.
I would say if there's one thing to watch in the remainder of these non-conference games that are kind of, you know, just work on your own thing, is that you kind of want to see if someone's going to emerge or not, or if we're just going to go with this, like, three-headed monster, I guess. Because I think Cork, yeah, had a decent game, and we kind of know what a ceiling is.
Mm-hmm.
And Mustafa showed flashes last game, obviously. And you kind of know what his ceiling is, too. Like, they're both not the most huge athletic guys. They're both kind of solid. And I feel like I find myself almost rooting for Ernest to emerge, yes, because you know his ceiling is just insane,
mm-hmm,
if he can emerge. Mm-hmm. But so far, I mean, he's probably been the most subpar of all the three. So yeah, I'm interested to see. I'm almost hoping that Ernest takes that next step to where he can find himself playing big minutes for this team down the stretch.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I think if Ernest does kind of, you know, present him or show him, he ends up as the guy at the center spot, I think that means that he's improved a lot, because I don't think the other two centers are bad. Like, that's the thing. If Ernest, like, all of a sudden is getting most of the minutes, I think that means that he's a really good player and he's improved a lot. So I'm rooting for that as well. I think overall, it's just really nice as someone watching this team. It's nice to know that, like, that is not a super glaring issue anymore.
Yeah, I think the rebounding numbers last game were 52-25. We out-rebounded. Mm-hmm. And that's been a strong suit of us the past couple of years, is, like, rebounding and defense. And our defense was kind of subpar the first game, but we improved it the second game. So to get on the backbone rebounds and defense, to just get out and transition fast, like, Dixon teams are so good in transition. And it's obviously huge to have these big men racking up the boards.
Yeah. Looking forward for TCU, it's not a super exciting schedule. I think it's exciting just in the fact that some of these guys are going to get opportunities to play and kind of show themselves a little bit. The first kind of meaningful game is at Georgetown in December, but coming up, UT Rio Grande Valley, Mississippi State Valley, both this week. I don't know. I don't think there's a ton to talk about. I think it's similar to how we kind of talked about the upcoming schedule last week. Like, these games shouldn't be a problem, but like Oklahoma State showed us, anything can happen. But yeah, I guess you mentioned you're intrigued by the center position, but what else would you like to see this week in these two games against teams that TCU really shouldn't have much of a problem with?
Yeah, it's very similar to last week, I think, when your opponents you should beat by a lot, and just working on your own stuff, like seeing who's gonna emerge, seeing how guys gel with the offense. But to be honest, I like what I saw out of week one. Maybe see who's gonna become the go-to guy if you have one. But if not, I mean, I just want to see how this team gels together and just kind of get more reps and just keep everybody healthy.
Yeah,
absolutely. But to be honest, I'm more looking forward to some of the Big 12 games. Like, we have San Diego State, BYU tonight, just to see how it goes. And then Kansas-Kentucky is next Tuesday, I believe. So yeah, there's some good Big 12 games coming up that's big for TCU fans to keep their eye on.
Mm-hmm. For sure, yeah. The last thing we have for TCU is pretty cool. Jamie Dixon just signed the highest ranked recruiting class in TCU history. He has he just signed the number 11 class in the country, which, like, I've been watching TCU basketball for a long time, and I always kind of followed recruiting, but it was never like this. Like, this is crazy. 11th in the country for TCU is just really cool. And they got some dudes in that class. What is your takeaway? Like, how important are classes like these for TCU and Jamie Dixon?
Yeah, it's interesting because Jamie has built this program a lot on transfers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see him, like, homegrown guys, a lot of them, and just building it from the ground up is huge for the program. Like, the dude has just changed this thing a ton. Mm-hmm. And if you can see this being consistently, you can be one of the top programs in the country if you just keep building talent and talent and maybe get some guys in the league and have stuff like that. But we got some dudes that I think fit what Jamie's trying to do well, athletic guys who can run and all kind, like, wings and
mm-hmm.
guys from Texas and stuff like that. So
yeah, some kind of fun facts about this class to kind of put it into perspective how massive of a class this is. Three of the four signees, Micah Robinson, David Punch, and Malik Diallo, are all in the top 10 TCU commits of all time. Micah Robinson is third, Punch is 8, Malik is 9. That's crazy. Just, like, really unbelievable that three of the top 10 are in this one class, kind of unheard of for TCU. And then number 11th in the country, the only current Big 12 school ahead of TCU in these rankings is Kansas. They have the fourth ranked class, but that means TCU is ranked ahead of Colorado, Baylor, Texas, Cincinnati. Like, I think that just kind of, and like you said, a lot of these teams are transitioning more to prioritizing the transfer portal rather than high school kids. But regardless, like, beating teams like that on the recruiting trail is how you're going to beat these teams on the basketball court. So I just think, like, the job that Jamie has done, capitalizing on some recent success in this program has been he's done a really good job, and it's really unbelievable to see how good this class ended up being.
Yeah, we've seen in the past few years, like, slowly taking the next steps. It's like, look, we won the NIT X many years ago. You make the tournament, you know, back-to-back tournament wins in years, you just keep going up and up and up, and this is kind of the next step and where top recruits are buying in. Like, yeah, Punch was a top 100 guy, I believe. Mm-hmm. Robinson was a top 100 guy. And they're getting guys that fit the system. Like, Diallo was a top 100 guy. And I have pieces written about these on Killer Frogs too. And I know you did a piece mm-hmm. summarizing the whole class. So
yeah,
if you're interested in that, go check it out. But
yeah, go check it out for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely the big next step in making TCU basketball a legitimate program is getting these top guys. And hopefully we'll just keep going up and up and up.
Yeah. And it is worth mentioning, we didn't really touch on Ashton Simmons, because he was not one of those top 10 all-time TCU recruits. But nonetheless, like, he is the 208th best player in the country. He's the 15th best player in Texas. A couple of years ago, landing Ashton Simmons would be headline news for TCU. So I don't think that, I mean, he's a point guard. He's a combo guard. He kind of fills that need, especially if you think about some of the guard losses TCU may have next year. But Ashton Simmons is a good player. I watched some film on him. He's a good player. And I think that all four of these guys are just, I mean, it's clear that he's addressing needs out of high school, which is interesting as the game kind of changes. But yeah, it's a lot to be excited about right now for TCU basketball.
Yeah, obviously this will be kind of a hybrid too. Like, we're like, Jamie's going to keep bringing in transfers, and you're going to need to compete in the Big 12 year after year. But something I love is it's so big in college basketball to fit your system. And obviously Jamie's got a unique system where he likes to run and have athletic wings that who can do a lot and stuff like that. And these guys all fit what he's trying to do. And sometimes it's not just stars, but who fits with the coach. And these guys all seem to have a great relationship with him. So
yeah,
I love what this class has to offer. And it'll be interesting to see how our roster is formed in the next coming years.
Yeah. I think that there's a chance that this roster looks a lot different next year because of some of the guys we have right now are just old. So I do think that he'll still utilize that portal, but it's really encouraging to see him kind of dominate and out of the high school area. So that's great to see.
Yeah, it's big to dominate where your surroundings too. Like, we've seen in football a lot, like, oh, you need to be able to recruit out of DFW. You need to get these Texas guys, and Jamie's gotten them. So I love what he's got to see.
Yep. Well, it was a pretty exciting week for TCU basketball. 2-0, the 11th best class in the country. Nick is writing a lot on killerfrogs.com about all of this. I'm writing some on killerfrogs.com. Go check those out. Once again, we'd like to thank you for listening to this week's episode of Frog Fever Killer Frogs Basketball Podcast. Nick, it was fun. You can find us on whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Once again, I'm Davis Wilson. That's Nick Geramonte. And we will see you next week.
Thank you. See you next week.
See ya.